This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
You're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show that advocates a four-day work week. Today is May 29th, 2006. Rusty is about to call John Dashler, an independent candidate for governor here in the Peach State. Let's listen in.
That's John.
Hi, John. This is Rusty with the Georgia Podcast Network. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I just wanted to speak to you about a few issues. You're an independent candidate running for governor of Georgia, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Technically, I'm not a candidate yet until I qualify.
Okay. And that's one of the issues I wanted to talk with you about. Since you're not running as a Republican or as a Democrat, I hear you're having a little bit of trouble getting onto the ballot, correct?
Yeah, the ballot access laws in the state of Georgia, according to Richard Winger of Ballot Access News, who's a California resident and has had a passion for this issue for 22 years, says Georgia is has the most restrictive ballot access laws in the country. And I have found it to be very much so. Also, according to him, Georgia is the only state in the country who has never had an independent candidate qualify for statewide office. And statewide office means serving within the state government.
Secretary of State, et cetera.
Yeah, we've had presidential, third-party presidential candidates have made the ballot, Ross Perot being one of them.
Okay. What sort of obstacles are you facing in trying to get on the ballot here in the state? What makes it so restrictive?
Well, the most restrictive is the criteria. The criteria is 1% of the number of people that were registered for the previous election for that office, which is slightly less than 40,000 signatures. Now, technical standpoint, 40,000 signatures is very restrictive. When you take the practical application of it, the practical application is I technically have 180 days from my final qualifying date, which is noon on July the 11th. So the January the 12th is the technical date at which time I could begin the signature collection process. But practically speaking, with the legislature in session, no one, and I mean no one, was interested in the gubernatorial race or, for that matter, any other elections until such time as the legislature adjourned. So you practically speaking, get it condensed into a three-month time frame, and then furthering the difficulty is the signature collection process is when I say I need just slightly fewer than 40,000, anyone that's ever done the nomination petition route before knows that there's a 20% error rate. Well, we thought we had it set up where we would not have that type of issue, but not being in control of the people who were out being collectors, we found that it is so. So instead of having to collect just under 40,000, it'd be probably more like 50,000 signatures.
To account for that 20% error rate.
Yeah, and the errors come in with, I have to submit the nomination petitions bundled and packaged a certain way by law to the Secretary of State in that window frame of 26 June until the 11th of July. And in order for the Secretary of State, who happens to be an opponent, and the Secretary of State is my election supervisor, the name has to be printed clearly. The date of birth has to be printed clearly. And many of the collectors don't oversee that process as much as or as closely as they should. And then each nomination petition contains 15 signatures. The first person that signs that whatever county they are from, all of the remaining signatures on that 15 signature sheet must be from the same county. In other words, they're county specific. And I don't think we've gotten one in yet that, for example, I live in Woodfield County. I don't believe we've gotten one in yet that had all 15 signatures signed by people from Whitfield County. There'll be one from Murray County, one from Catoosa County. And so that's where the errors come in. And you're not allowed to copy them. So that's a problem. The other problem has been the misunderstanding within the media. No one really understands, and by my estimation, has taken the time to educate themselves in the media, that is, in the field of journalism, on what the criteria is, because they're pretty much predisposed with the thought independent doesn't have a chance. So why take the time? Why make the effort? And most of the media outlet across the state, after qualifying week, the end of April, made public service announcements that qualifying for statewide office was over. And I sent a press release out correcting them, and it was amazing to me, out of the 280 media outlets in the state, how many did not even open the email. That the receipt came back to us. They just, you know, we put a reply on them. And if they don't open them, it comes back unread. And it was absolutely amazing to me that that was the case. So with the way the laws are made, are written, and the practical matter, it is extremely difficult to do. Not impossible, just hasn't been done before. And then compounding it is I've been virtually blocked out by the media during the whole campaign. I've had a few small market radio stations that have had me on. I've had a couple interviews with very small market newspapers, but virtually we've been totally ignored from a journalistic standpoint. In all major media, I don't believe I've had 1 second of coverage on TV, whether it's major market or otherwise. The Atlanta
Now, why do you think that is? Why do you think that the mainstream media ignores candidates that don't have a party affiliation? I mean, would it be fair to say that it's harder, even if all the media coverage was equal, for an independent candidate to raise funds for a campaign?
The raising of funds has not been an issue for me at this point in time. The collecting the signatures does not have to be a statewide effort. I would like for it to have been, but we actually concentrated on regions. Some were planned, and others were where we were shown some interest by some groups of people who have issues for which they don't have access and they don't have a voice. But some of the reasons, to answer your question on lack of media coverage, I think there are several reasons. Number one, because I don't have the money and we have to file our campaign finance reports, it's rather obvious to the media outlets when they put their business hat on, hey, why give this guy free coverage or free name recognition? He's not going to be doing any advertising with us. And if they don't think in those terms, I am absolutely certain that the parties or advertisers who are active in the political process are absolutely certain to remind them that why give this guy free name recognition? So that's one of the reasons. One of the others, and I think it's really part and parcel to the same. I actually sat in the outside of a radio studio to do a two-hour radio talk show and was told a half an hour before we went on the air that due to a, quote, extraordinary circumstance, unquote, I would not be going on the air. And I listened to the program. There were no guests at all. And this was a political talk show. So,
And did they ever give you an explanation of what the extraordinary circumstances?
I just gave you the explanation that I got. Then I was doing a major speech in one of our metropolitan areas in the state, and sent press releases to 14 media outlets, every media outlet in that community, and not a one gave me a second of airtime, not a one gave me a word of copy, and not a one showed up to cover the speech.
Now, to be fair, had either, you know, Governor Perdue or Mark Taylor, Kathy Cox, any of the other Democratic candidates given a speech at the same time in that area, or?
No. No, okay. They have not. Now, that matter of fact, they were not allowed, if you recall, elected officials or holders
That's
of
true.
Statewide
yeah,
office
you're right
not
about
allowed
that.
To campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the only political news that was going on other than national was what was going on with the legislature.
Okay.
So then, I mean, there have been some ugly things that have happened that, that should concern every Georgian. I had a probably the most blatant example of harassment, or we could outright call it threats, was a 80-year-old Italian barber who had decided that he would collect signatures for me in his barber shop, and he had a little church on the side. 2 days after he began collecting signatures, he was visited by a guy in a suit that identified himself as a an attorney associated with the Republican Party, and he was told if he did not remove all of Dashler's stuff from his barber shop, then he would lose his tax-exempt status on his church. Now, this is a deplorable state.
Okay, so wait a minute. This was his barber shop, not his church.
That's correct. It was his barber
okay.
shop.
Now, I mean, they would have some standing there, it sounds to me, if they were doing that in a church. I mean, you can't
correct.
Put political flyers and things like that in a church, or they'd be
correct.
Right. You know, you'd be dealing with tax-exempt status. But in his
That's
barber
correct.
Shop, in his place of business,
yeah.
they did that?
Yeah.
That's,
and don't know
that
the guy
ridiculous.
Was with the Republican Party or not, but he was a man in a suit, and I happened to be the first one to hear it from the barber because I just happened to have written him a thank you note the night before and realized I was passing through that area the next day, and I decided, well, I'll just stop in, introduce myself, and shake his hand, give him the thank you note, and I did. And bless his heart, he was trembling and he was visibly shaken. And I just asked him to forget about it. Just give me the materials and don't worry about it. So, and that's the most blatant example there. I have a long list. I've been blocked out of the university system of Georgia. Not the entire system. I should qualify that. There, each college that I have attempted to address political science clubs. I have been denied, you know, and I begin to wonder, what is it that they're afraid of? And if you go on my website and you look at the 190 pages that I have written, and actually I typed the whole thing myself as well, they have a lot to be afraid of. The parties are not delivering for the 9 million citizens of Georgia, which is why I decided to run as an independent. I didn't want to be part of that. I want to be part of solving the problems that are confronting everyday Georgians. And not, I like to say it, I am about the business of Georgia and not the business of politics. I'm not a politician. I happen to be a private citizen who is running for elected office.
How do you think the individual parties are failing people?
Well, look across the state right now at all the serious issues that we have. Education is a serious issue. Nobody across this state, and I've talked to personally to 3,000 give or take, and nobody is happy with the education system, and nor should we be. We basically pay the most and our student performance or student achievement is in the bottom tier in every measurable category. So, you know, why is that so? It has to be so because of the politics that are involved. I'm a problem solver. I'm an entrepreneurial businessman, and I am well skilled on the entrepreneurial culture. And look at the illegal immigration issue. We wait, because of politics, we wait until a problem escalates to a crisis stage where every businessman knows that if you, as soon as you identify a problem, and if your leader has a pulse beat on what is going on in the state or under his area of responsibility, every leader knows that he is searching vigorously to identify problems in their earliest stages so as to preclude them from escalating to a crisis stage. And that just hasn't been done.
Just talking about, you mentioned education, immigration. Out of the recent immigration legislation that's been proposed, for example, when the state legislature proposed taxing all Western Union telegraphs of wired money without proper identification, do you think that sort of legislation is productive or not productive?
No, I think that's reactive, and I think it's playing to emotions of a group that is most vocal in this particular case. And we have a lot of Georgians that are very militant when it comes to the issue of illegal immigration and how to treat them. And you can't blame many of them for reaching that. They've been interested in this issue for 10, 15 years. Our government has done absolutely nothing about it. Their taxes continue to go up, and they're looking for reasons why. And when the Minutemen got exposure to the problem down on the border, and that escalated, and they had done a good thing because the border needs to be closed. And so it has escalated into a situation that never had to happen. And it's
How would Governor Daschler handle this differently?
Well, first of all, what you're asking me is a Monday morning quarterbacking question. If we go back and follow my philosophy, we would have seen that we had a problem 15 years ago that was developing. At the time, enforcement of the law could have kept it from escalating into the situation that it escalated into. Other than that, talking about the specifics of what's going on or what went on with our legislature or what's going on in the Congress, let's jump fast forward a little bit. If I get on the ballot, I get elected in November, I take office in the middle of January. By that time, there is no doubt in my mind that the U.S. Congress is going to have decided what direction we're going to go insofar as enforcement or work permits, working them into the system. This is my commitment. Regardless of what it is, Georgia will be the best at either rounding them up and tossing them out, enforcement, or we'll be the best at working them into the system.
Okay, so, I mean, that almost sounds like two different answers to me, though.
Okay. What would I prefer?
What would you prefer?
Well, what I would have preferred in the earliest stage would have been the enforcement. As it escalated to the large numbers and these people having worked them ways themselves into integral parts of communities, I think the enforcement is not as good an option at this point as it is working them into the system. Because if you recall, what all of the militants on the issue are talking about now is what they cost us. And that's the biggest issue, what they cost us. If that is the issue and it's not a cultural issue, then working them into the system the quickest means they pay their way. Now, some of that argument is switching over now. What don't you understand about the term illegal? Well, there's nothing that I don't understand about that term. And then you have to ask, what is it that some people may not understand about? If your big concern is cost and you go 100% to enforcement, in other words, round them up and toss them out, you hadn't seen anything yet in relationship to what the cost will be.
Well, there's something like 14 million illegal immigrants in this country, and I would venture to say over 500,000 in Georgia, though that's a number I haven't verified.
I think it's all way understated. I don't think anybody knows the numbers on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the census picks them up or something.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And if we knew the numbers on them, you can bet that the hot seat that the politicians are on right now, they would be coming out with exactly what the numbers are. Well, they don't know what any of the numbers are, not only how many are here, but what they're costing us, as opposed to what they're contributing to the economy or what they're contributing. You know, there are a lot of numbers that need to be understood. But again, this is Monday morning quarterbacking. If you look at the situation 15 years ago and 10 years ago, and you were a leader who stays on top of the pulse beat of what is going on, those numbers would have been collected in Georgia.
What sort of problems do you see now that might turn into problems 15 years from now? The same kind of thing that could be prevented, where a crisis could be prevented 15 years from now.
Well,
we're addressing it now.
Well, illegal drug situation, the meth situation, which is creating a tremendous strain on county budgets through law enforcement and the need for jails. Our prison system, I believe we're still short five or six prisons. We're understaffed at the prisons we have. The Department of Corrections workers have basically been left out of the formula, but illegal drugs is one of them, but it's one that's already at crisis stage. And our leaders have known about the development of this. I mean, even, 18 months ago, the governor stood up and said, meth is growing like kudzu. Well, that's fine. What'd you do about it? Put $1 million here and $5 million there?
As I recall, didn't they restrict some of the over-the-counter sales of some of the ingredients that make meth?
Yeah, they sure did. But if you realize that out of our 48 Georgia State Patrol barracks that we have, 29 of them are shut down at 11 o'clock every night until 7 o'clock in the morning. Instead of a meth maker going to the local drug store or Kmart or Walmart and buying what they need, now they're coming in truckloads across the border. Now, if you were running that stuff, what time of the day would you choose to travel on Georgia's interstates?
I think I'd go after 11. I hate to cut this off because it's been a wonderful discussion.
Let's do it again.
But yeah, let's absolutely do it again. I've really enjoyed talking to you here, John. And
every citizen should be informed, and every citizen should participate. And I have to make this plug, Rusty, before we go.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I have 6 weeks remaining to collect the 40,000 signatures. We have 1,700 people in 70 counties right now that are in possession of nomination petitions. How well they're collecting them, I don't know. But we have 6 weeks remaining, and anyone that hears this, please contact my headquarters at dashlerforgov.com, dashlerforgov.com, or call us at 706-529-7625. And please get involved, regardless of who you get involved with. Get involved. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, and have a great day.
You too. Take care. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you know a Georgia band or a hippie with a guitar that would like to have their music featured in a podcast, have them contact us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com. This way, the ending of the shows won't seem so abrupt.